The young man sat in his prison cell, fingering a rosary someone handed him, and trying to come up with some prayer to go with the beads. This was, in fact, the first time he had ever prayed. The results, he reflected years later, were nothing short of astonishing. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, and you're listening to the After Dinner Scholar, Wyoming Catholic College's weekly podcast. The Wyoming Catholic College class of 2018 graduated on Saturday, May 12th. Their graduation speaker was the young man in the prison cell, author and scholar Joseph Pierce. Pierce has come a long way since his white supremacist days in London to having authored more than 24 books, including The Quest for Shakespeare, Tolkien, Man and Myth, The Unmasking of Oscar Wilde, C.S. Lewis and the Catholic Church, Literary Converts, Wisdom and Innocence, A Life of G.K. Chesterton, Solzhenitsyn, A Soul in Exile, and Old Thunder, A Life of Hilaire Belloc. Pierce is a man of books, and books figure prominently even into his conversion. Joseph Pierce is our guest this week on the After Dinner Scholar. Professor Pierce, in your spiritual autobiography, Race with the Devil, you mentioned that you were in prison twice for what might today be called hate crimes. The first time you were defiant, angry, and it sounds like rather vengeful. The second time was different. What had changed, and specifically, what had you read and why had you read it?
Between the two prison sentences, basically, I'd read more and more Catholic authors, especially and particularly I'd fallen in love with G.K. Chesterton. So I was reading much Chesterton, and through Chesterton I'd met and got to know the works of Hilaire Belloc and C.S. Lewis, and I think it was during the second prison sentence that I first read Newman. I read Newman's Apologia Pro Vita Sua, and I first started reading Thomas Aquinas also during the second prison sentence. So I was basically making what I would have called then an intellectual ascent, in both senses of the word, ascent as in going up, and ascent as in saying yes to fides et ratio, to faith and reason.
What started you reading the books?
Well, I nobody would have persuaded me to read a Christian book of any sort. I was ambivalent at best towards Christianity, hostile at worst, and very hostile to Catholicism. But I was interested in politics. I was very involved in politics as a young man, and I came across the political ideas and the economic ideas of G.K. Chesterton and Hilaire Belloc, what the ideas that are called distributism. And so what the hook was, the political ideas. And for a long time, my attitude to Chesterton was the same as C.S. Lewis's attitude to Chesterton. When Lewis first read Chesterton in World War I, he was an atheist. And he said, and I remember picking up the book Surprised by Joy, where Lewis writes about his first reading of Chesterton. And I wasn't a believing Christian at the time. And Lewis says that one would have thought that Chesterton would be the least conducive of writers for me, as I was an atheist and he was a Christian. But I couldn't help liking Chesterton. And as I'm reading Lewis, I think, yeah, that's exactly how I feel. I'm not Christian, but I can't help liking Chesterton. I love his sense of humor. I said, yes, exactly. He has more common sense than all the moderns put together, except, of course, his Christianity. So, and I thought, that's exactly it. That's exactly how I feel. He has more common sense than everybody except his Christianity. So I bought Surprised by Joy, and of course, that book by Lewis is Lewis's own conversion story. So I, began to realize that, that if I carry on reading this stuff, I'm in dangerous territory. As Lewis said of reading Chesterton, that a sound atheist cannot be too careful of his reading.
Yeah, exactly. Now tell us about some of the authors you've written about. How did you get interested in Shakespeare, Solzhenitsyn, Tolkien, and so on? And what did you learn from them as you studied them?
Well, my first book as a Catholic was a biography of Chesterton, and I always say that was an act of thanksgiving. An act of thanksgiving to God for giving me Chesterton, but also an act of thanksgiving to Chesterton for giving me God. But I came to realize in researching my book, Literary Converts, how many literary figures did become Catholics. And I became fascinated by these literary converts. And so I started writing about them, first of all of them in a panoramic view in Literary Converts, but then going back to them singularly. So my books are on figures such as Hilaire Belloc and Oscar Wilde are a part of that Catholic literary revival. As regards Shakespeare, I've always loved Shakespeare, and I didn't believe that Shakespeare was Catholic. And when friends of mine said he was Catholic, I thought that was just wishful thinking. But then I started looking at the evidence, and it's like finding pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. And at some point, there's enough pieces of the puzzle that you realize there's a picture here of a Catholic. And so I started methodically researching Shakespeare's Catholicism.
What about Solzhenitsyn?
Solzhenitsyn was a hero of mine from my teenage years. I read the Gulag Archipelago, first of all, when I was probably only about 16 or 17 years old. So he's a hero of mine, and of course he was a convert to Orthodox Christianity, so he's another one of these literary converts. And I wrote to him. I have no idea how I got hold of his address in Russia. He'd returned to Russia by this stage, and wrote to him asking, said I'd like to write his biography. And I didn't think he'd even reply, and I certainly didn't think he'd reply in the affirmative. But he did, and so I went across to Moscow, and one of the greatest honors of my life was having a weekend with Alexander Solzhenitsyn, interviewing him, and that became, if you like, one of the core of my biography of him.
Well, certainly an amazing character.
Absolutely.
Now, tell us about the influential authors or books that you haven't written about.
Well, there's many of those. Well, I mean, there's lots of books I'd like to write. I'd like to write every single one of Shakespeare's plays, and on the sonnets, and on the poems, the longer poems. I don't know if God will give me enough time. I have a wife and children to support, and so you know, I have to do other things. But I'm currently writing a book called What Every Catholic Should Know About the Great Works of Literature. So that's a more panoramic overview. There's many books I'd like to write. I'd like to write more literary criticism, but the thing with literary criticism, you're not going to put food on the table for your family by writing literary criticism. So I'd like to write a book on Eliot's The Wasteland. I'd like to write a book on Gerard Manny Hopkins's The Wreck of the Deutschland. So these are things that maybe one of these days, when I'm a bit older, if I still have health and I don't need the money maybe quite so much, that I'll get around to doing.
Well, some of the great books as well, the ancients, have you read those? Have an influence on your thinking?
Well, they did. I'm a literature person more than a philosopher or a theologian, of course, but I have obviously read Aristotle and Plato and Augustine and Aquinas. But I love Homer. I mean, the Iliad and the Odyssey are two of my favorite books, and I've actually just been writing about them for that book I've just mentioned. You know, I obviously love Dante. I love Beowulf. I love Anglo-Saxon poetry. So, yeah, really, I like to keep myself steeped in the glories of Christian literature, and even pre-Christian literature that's, if you like, pointing to Christ. And I do think there's much in Homer, in the Iliad and the Odyssey, and in Virgil, in the Aeneid, that's pointing to Christ, prefiguring Christ.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've also put together some anthologies of poetry, Poems Every Catholic Should Know. I think it should have been titled Poems Every Christian Should Know. My wife adores that book. Tell us about the influence of poetry in your life.
Yes, well, that book actually began when I was still living in England. I wanted to do something specifically Christian for the millennium, because as the millennium celebration was approaching, the end of the 1990s, the British establishment were doing all sorts of secular things to commemorate 2,000 years of since the birth of Christ. It seemed to me that we needed to have something specifically Christian. So my little contribution to that was to do an anthology of verse, which was originally titled in England, Flowers of Heaven, 1,000 Years of Christian Verse. And then when Tan Books wanted to publish a new edition of it, it was their idea to call it Poems Every Catholic Should Know. Now, I'm inclined to agree that Poems Every Christian Should Know would be a better title, but it was a good marketing spin, because I think when I'm giving talks, you can see that I'm a homeschooling conference or wherever, people see a book, Poems Every Catholic Should Know, and they think, well, I should know them, which means I should buy the book. In other words, as a marketing spin, it was much more effective than Flowers of Heaven, which was the previous title.
Well, and we're not a poetry reading people, so anything that can get people thinking about poetry and looking at it.
Yeah, well, I'm a great champion of poetry. I actually see an analogy, a parallel between poetry and prayer, because in both cases, we have to slow down. and we have to disengage, if you like, from the distractions of the everyday world, and it allows us to reconnect with deeper realities. And one of the beauties of good poetry is you can't read it quickly, so you do actually have to come down a gear or two, and that's good for us. And it does, if you like, lay the foundations for contemplation, meditation, and that dilation, that opening of the soul to the presence of the real, which is ultimately God. So I think that poetry is something which enriches all of our lives if we can find the time, even just 15 minutes every day, to stop and read some good Christian poetry, or just good poetry. We would benefit by it spiritually as well as intellectually.
Yeah, well, and to memorize it as well. Our students memorize a whole panoply of poetry.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, I used to think, though, I would parrot fashion learning, but in actual fact, what you do, it's not parrot, you're internalizing, right? You actually know the poem so well that you become familiar with it in the best sense of the word. And if every word is known to you, then you can see the connection between the words, you can see the alliteration, the beauty of the language, and you can, if you like, take it apart in the best sense by concentrating just on one line at a time. And so once you've internalized it, in some sense, you've... I've got to say, you possessed it, you become possessed by it, perhaps. And if this is a good Christian verse, just good solid work of art, then being possessed by it is a good thing.
Now, aside from your own books, this being the beginning of summer, almost the beginning of summer, people pick out summer reading. What are a couple of books that you might suggest and why?
The question there is a difficult one, because there's so many different people with different tastes. So, but I've written in the past Desert Island Desires, and the books I'll take with me on a desert island. And I think that, you know, if we're talking nonfiction, you'd have to take at least some sort of concise version of the Summas and writings of Aquinas. You'd have to have St. Augustine's Confessions, Plato's Republic, Aristotle's Ethics. But because I'm a literature person, so, you know, I'd be taking with me certainly a novel or two of Chesterton's, Brideshead Revisited by Evelyn Waugh, The Lord of the Rings by Tolkien, the poetry of Gerard Manley Hopkins, at least several plays by Shakespeare. Yes, and I'd be quite happy being left alone on a desert island for a year or two if I had the right materials and plenty of food, of course.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
If you're interested in reading Joseph Pierce's address to our students, visit the college website, wyomingcatholic.org, and sign up for Integritas, our bi-monthly publication featuring lectures given at the college or by our college professors elsewhere. In addition, last week, reading packets for the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought went out in the mail. The authors include Homer, Plato, Aristotle, Sophocles, Shakespeare, T.S. Eliot, and Simone Weil. And it's not too late to receive one of your own. Plan to join us here in Lander this June 10th to 14th to examine the paradox of courage, desire to live, readiness to die. And again, you can visit our website, wyomingcatholic.org, for more information and to register. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.